To this, the last in our series of seminars on ethics and the challenges of the 21st century. The idea of this program of seminars has been to really showcase the various different types of important science work being done at the Oxford Martin School, and also to talk about some of the ethical and regulatory challenges that arise out of that work. So today's presentation is really a kind of perfect one to end on. We're going to be hearing about nanotechnology, nanomedicine, and the issues involved in regulating it. And to present, we have Dr. Sonia Trigueros, who, as well as being a research fellow in the physics department, originally a biologist, is the co-director of the Oxford Martin Program on Nanotechnology. So she'll be speaking to us for about 50 minutes, and then we'll have plenty of time for questions after that. So please join me in welcoming Sonia.
Well, thank you, first of all, for Julian Sabulescu, Alison, to consider my work to be presented in this seminar series about ethics and the 21st century challenges. When I was preparing this talk, I found millions of ways to bring the topic of today on nanomedicine and nanotechnology, how nanotechnology is facing these ethics problems and the need of regulation. But I decided to do it in another way. I'm going to take you to the problem using my own experience. One project that I started working in the lab, and it has taken me to probably one of the most controversial material right now in the nanotechnology. And I hope that you will get it with me and you will understand why right now I've been involved without knowing, into all these problems on regulation industry and being part of the European Nanosafety Cluster regulation for nanotechnologies. So I will try to convince today, I will see if I make it, that there is a need, an important need right now, to link experiments with product regulation and industry, especially when it comes to new emerging technologies like nanotechnology. But before I start talking about nanotechnology, let me tell you what it is, okay? So, nano. I'm sure that you have heard thousands of times, nano, but nano is a scale of size. So how small is a nano? Okay, so try to imagine that you get 1 meter, something like that, and divide it with your mind, try to divide it in 1 billion parts. Each part, which is very, very small, is a nano. Okay, so we are talking about things that are 1 billion smaller than a meter. Okay, so when we try to, so what is nanotechnology? Okay. So basically, the human eye, you can actually see, you can resolve things, you can visualize it, things such as a human hair, which is more or less around 100 microns, which is like 100,000 nanometers. So you can actually, with your eye, depends on the quality of your hair, obviously, you can actually see it. But the resolution between these two hairs is actually the resolution of the human eye. Below size, for instance, red blood cells, so human cells, bacteria and other matter, size below 10 micrometers and 1 micron, we actually use optical microscopes. Typical microscopes that you have in the lab where you can actually visualize and resolve these cells of that size. But below 1 micron is where things become a little bit more complicated. In order to study, for instance, viruses, which are around 100 nanometers, proteins, which are 10 nanometers, notice that I'm already in the range of nano. DNA, which is 2 nanometers, or atoms, which is 0.1 nanometers. To study the properties of the material at that level is what the nanotechnology is. So nanotechnology is the science to study the matter that has few nanometers scale. But something more important about nanotechnology is not just the power of visualizing. Nanotechnology has offered us a new opportunity to make new nanomaterial at the level of few nanometers. So we have technology that allows us to have a big macro structure that you can hold it with your hands and make it small until you get few nanometers material, so we call nanomaterials. And more, a little bit more complicated, is to we have technology that allowed us to put atom by atom together in a very precise way. And for instance, if you get 10 atoms together, you have a 1 nanometer structure. Okay, so we are now able to make new materials at the level of nano, very few nanometers, either breaking down big structures or putting together atoms one by one till you reach this. Everyone that works with the new materials at the nano level, we all have found, and this is the probably the most important thing of the nanotechnology as an emerging technology, is that all the properties of the material at the nano level are totally different from what we are used to at the macro level or at the atomic level. So what I mean, you always know, for instance, you have a wire of copper. You can flexible, you can twist it around, you can do, even there's an art, there's a person here in Oxford who makes sculptures with wires of silver and copper. When you do nano copper, very small, around 10 nanometers, is the harder material that we have. So the properties of the material at the nano level, it changed completely. And because of that, we have now plenty of different new materials. For instance, aluminium at the nano level becomes explosive. Gold doesn't look like gold anymore. It changes completely the color, and we use it for diagnosis. So all this new thing has produced us a new field of nanomaterials, and that's the base of the emerging nanotechnology. We have a completely new world in front of us. And that's the reason that nanotechnology... before I go there, let me just remind you one thing. Here, we have structures that we can do carbon nanotubes, they are more or less like 1 nanometer, quantum dots. This is the part of nanotechnology, using new nanomaterials that we are doing. But it's important to me, and remember this, that when it comes to the size, I remember that they are very small, but actually the size of these new nanomaterials is actually the same size of, for instance, atoms, molecules, DNA, ribosome, viruses. So the important on nanotechnology, especially in nanomedicine, and that's why nanomedicine and nanobiology are so important right now, is because the size of these nanomaterials are the same size of biological molecules. So when they come together, they will not interact with a whole bone, they will interact with the small molecules that are part of cells. Okay? So the fact that we have new materials, because you can imagine these materials now are already in products from electronics. We have, for instance, done with semiconductors, silicon semiconductors, like we have new chips that are very, very small. We nanotechnologies in electronics, in communication, new source of energy, a lot of things for environment, all kind of materials, because the fact that you have, for instance, something that is lighter at the nano level, you can make materials that are lighter. So, for instance, a lot of aircraft companies are very interested in new materials with nanotechnology. But today I'm going to focus a lot, just because, part of it is my project and it's my field, basically, on an important role that at this moment nanobiology or nanomedicine has. So at this point you think that nanomedicine is the use of nanotechnology in medicine, which is true, but because the size is the same like the molecules, nanomedicine and nanobiology has actually the role as well to tell us how these nanostructures interact with the human body or with the environment. So with nanomedicine, we are finding toxicity problems, we are finding new applications that these guys in the environment, in materials, in electronics, are not capable to see it because they are already using it. Okay. In 2011, so basically last year, October 2011, there was the first time that the European Commission actually mentioned and defined what is a nanomaterial. However, nanotechnology started by the invention of the atomic force microscopy in 1985. An important thing is that even the nanomaterial was actually mentioned and defined properly in 2011, in 2003, we could start seeing the first products on the market using nanotechnology. By today, we have 1,300 products on the market that use the products of nanotechnology, and it's expected, I think it's going to be even bigger than that, that in 2020 we will have more than 3,400 products already in the market. I always thought, probably I was a little bit naive, but I always thought that when something is new, you have to do research and development, then the information of your research you transfer to safety regulation or bodies where they actually check all the safety of the product and then you commercialize it. So today I want to talk about one thing that I think that it has been going backwards. basically commercialization, then the commercialization has bring issues on safety, back again to us on the research. As I said, like around 1,300 products has been I found in outer space, in space, in food, cosmetic, it's everywhere. Personal care products, textiles, pharmaceutical, wound care, chemicals. So there's quite a lot. So actually nanotechnology is with us already, okay? Especially now it's increasing the amount of use of nanotechnology in food from agriculture, food processing, packaging, supplements. However, there we go. What are the challenges that nanotechnology has? So it has a million opportunities because we have new materials that can actually bring new tools. However, it's facing quite a big challenge. I'm sure that we all hear and you all have an opinion about GM food, okay? And I'm sure that you have an opinion about stem cells, as well like if organic, inorganic food. We always make our choices based on what we listen to us. So what is the perception of the society about nanotechnology? If you look around, you ask around, you read around, at this point, the public perception is generally that the risk from nanotechnology would overweigh the benefits derived. So it's a little bit, the risk is still a little bit negative. Obviously, I cannot complain about that. And why is this? Because from 1960, we've been bound with plenty of nanorobots, especially when you do nanomedicine, everyone comes to you, oh, you're doing nanorobots, like, no, really. But people have this perception of nanotechnology. Books, important book like Isaac Asimov in 1960, in 2002, Michael Crichton take this book as well, but more than that, in 2010, the year of the nanoparticles, two important things appear on the market, is the Ultimate Aliens 2 and G.I. Joe Hollywood movie, where the bat are nanoparticles called nanomites, that they go in your brain, they change your personality, and you become bad. More than that, in 2011, where the year of in terms of science, we actually advanced a lot in tissue engineering and regenerative medicine. We finally got artificial skin that can be used. However, obviously, I love this movie. I recommend you should see the movie. La piel que habito, the skin I live in, from Pedro Almodóvar. But it's at the same time taking probably the science to the science fiction a little bit too much. Unfortunately for me, these movies, video games, books, have more impact in our society than my papers. So what I can do? I understand that nanotechnology is still kind of in a negative side of the risk perception. However, let me take you to what nanotechnology can do for health. What is nanomedicine talking about? On the 21st century, human health is compromised by lots of things. We have cancer, AIDS, malaria, antibiotic resistance, and a little bit smaller, I put the cholera, which is still with us, okay? So it's not just out of our danger on human health. So nanomedicine at this moment has actually, is very important. We have already designed the first nanobiosensors, so it's very, very small sensors that are able to detect just one or two molecules, okay? We're using nano in molecular diagnosis, in tissue engineering. Ah, annoying, sorry. Devices for surgery in the hospital, so to make the surgery less aggressive to the human body. And actually, one of the biggest now is the nanopharmaceuticals. It's all about the nanopart on drug delivery system, gene therapy, and all is all where all the pharmaceutical companies are actually more interested right now. And as very interesting right now, so one of my projects is actually falling into this category, and is what I want to use today to bring the problem of nanotechnology regulation. At the Oxford Martin program on nanotechnology, one of the first projects that I have in mind was to design a drug delivery system that it's able to, confine on top of this system, chemotherapy drugs. And this system, which is nano, will be smart enough to go all the way through the human body and only target cancer cells. That's what I call develop a drug delivery system to selectively target cancer cells. Okay, when you start a project like that, one thing I have very clear, what I want to target on the cancer cell, and that was some particular DNA conformations and some proteins called biomolecular motors. I have it very clear because that's part of my PhD, so that part I know pretty well. I know exactly what drugs I will confine on the nanostructures, because that's what I've been doing for my first two postdocs, but I have no idea what nanostructure I should use. I was new on the field of nanotechnology. So let me show you quickly. This is an atomic force microscopy of DNA in liquid. This is the structure of my DNA molecular motors, which I'm targeting with the chemotherapy drugs. And why I'm targeting this? Because these motors, actually, one of the functions is to remove the tension generated on the DNA during the cell metabolic process. And the lack of these motors in our cells produce the first steps for premature aging syndrome. However, if you have lots of these proteins, the DNA has no tension, and it's faster for the cell, it's faster, and it's easy to grow faster and faster and faster. And that's a very general definition of a cancer cell. We know that cancer cells, these molecular motors, are overexpressed. There are plenty. So that's why 80% of the chemotherapy drugs that we have on the market are actually targeting these proteins. If you stop these proteins, the cell stops growing. However, the chemotherapy therapy now that we have right now cannot distinguish between cancer cells, healthy cells. So it stops every cell that in your body is growing. And that is what produces the secondary effects of chemotherapy treatments. So you lose your hair, because your hair is growing. You lose your nails. And actually the worst thing is affecting your immune system, just because the drugs act on these cells, on all these proteins. So with my project, the idea is, if I confine the drug on these nanostructures, first of all, the drug will not be jumping around the whole body, and more, like probably that's the last part of this project, which has been very difficult, is to target only to the cell that you want. Okay, so that will definitely, will not cure the cancer, obviously, but we actually will have a better treatment for it. So there we go. When I start thinking what nanostructures I need to use, and seriously, I'm a biologist, I have no idea of physics, chemistry, or nano. So what I do is what normal people do. You just go to the papers that have been published, these things, and you select the ones that you believe that you can work with. So in my case, I select these three ones. The reason for single wall carbon nanotubes is because I have it in the lab. You have them very long, and it's one of these processes that you break them down until the size that you want. Second, silver nanoparticles, because it's the opposite. I learned how to do them, actually, in one collaboration in Cuba. They teach me how to do the silver nanoparticles. And you use the opposite reaction. You put in by chemistry reaction, you put it atoms by atoms together until you reach the size that you want. And I select the third one, the dendrimers, because this structure, you have this dendrimeric structure, it's very easy to functionalize the drugs here. You don't need to do any chemical process to functionalize the drugs here. And to be honest, because I can buy them. So I thought, if I deal with two, the other one, something that is commercial will help me a little bit. Okay, so there we go. When I start working with these guys, plenty of papers talking about silver nanoparticles as a drug delivery systems. One of the things that I found is that it doesn't matter if I'm talking about wall carbon nanotubes or silver nanoparticles. There's a spontaneous aggregation of the nanomaterial that occurs after 5 minutes up to 10 minutes after you make them. So basically what was happening is that after 5 minutes of making my structures in the lab, I came across to this, with all the nanotubes all wrapped together, and you can actually see with your eyes. So remember, if you see with your eyes, it's like the human hair size, okay? Look at the silver as well. And this is not only happened because it was in water, but actually on a physiological medium where I will do the experiment, there was the same problem as well. They were aggregated. So the first thing that I thought, like, okay, this is not that easy, as the people say in the paper. So at this moment, I find out the way to overcome the problems with silver single wall carbon nanotubes, but I will not talk today about this, but if everyone wants to know a little bit more, please do contact me. And today, I'm gonna talk about the adventure of working with silver nanoparticles. If I seriously knew all the problems that these nanoparticles would have bring to me, I would have choose gold or copper, okay? Otherwise, it makes me be more now active on regulation and things. Silver nanoparticles. Interestingly, this is a TM picture. This is after 5 minutes I make them. Actually, we obtain this in Cuba. As soon as we make them, we imagine them. You can see quite nice, round, beautiful, more or less the same size when I come back from my trip, and probably a month later when I found a TM in Oxford, I look at them and look at that. Completely different shapes, aggregated, like big, big ones. So basically these guys, even though I stopped their chemical reaction, they were not stopping. They keep growing and growing. And some of them were bigger, some of them were smaller. So look at the end. So I cannot use this because I don't even know what size I have. I mean, there's a broad distribution of different size. So, okay, with my PhD student, Amadeus Stevenson, I call my PhD student because I only have one. So we decide to think, okay, let's see if we can actually find what's going on. Why is silver a soil stable? We actually did it. We found that the problem with these nanoparticles is that once you make them, you stop the reaction, but the surface of the silver nanoparticle is very unstable, okay? As soon as you make them, you stop the growth. Actually, the growth doesn't stop, and it's the surface of the nanoparticle that this instability, what means is that silver ions on the surface are very energetic, and they can go out of there. They can be released from the nanoparticle, and they can be in and out. So I did the best that I could to stop the reaction, but the only way that I stopped the reaction was when I add a layer, a second layer on the surface. So these guys here, beautiful ones, run the same shape, same size, perfect. Actually, they are a core of silver and a thin layer of gold. Gold is more stable than silver. And that was one way to stop the growth. Here you have an alloy where I mix silver and copper and chrome, and actually on the surface I have chrome, so they're more stable. So basically we found probably 3 to 5 ways to stop the nanoparticles being unstable. However, what I have in the surface is no longer silver. Is what I add to stop the reaction. So if I'm interested in silver and how silver interact with molecules, this is no longer what I wanted. So we found a way to have nanoparticles stable for 1 month, only that. Even though at the end of the 25th day, I'm a bit not 100% sure. So we decided to do some research, what is the interaction of these nanoparticles? And we have to have the cells, the nanoparticles ready and do everything in 1 month, and then another set of experiments another month, okay? So in that way, we are sure that what we have is the initial nanoparticles and not ions jumping around, okay? First of all, I'm sure that you all have heard that silver nanoparticles, silver ions are toxic on bacteria, they kill bacteria. So okay, so I want to know how these nanoparticles interact with the bacteria. You can see a cartoon. When you zoom in the membrane, where is the part that separates the inside of the cell from the outside medium. So the membrane is where these nanoparticles, when they go down, they will interact. Due to the size, as I mentioned at the beginning, these nanoparticles, they will interact with this protein here, or maybe this protein, or maybe they go inside to the next level. So this is the membrane of bacteria. It's quite complex, actually, when you think about it. People think the bacteria are very simple, but not that much. So, okay, another problem. How I'm gonna study if these nanoparticles interact here, here, and here? Or maybe inside, actually. So, I designed an experiment, a protocol where I use 4 different antibiotics, well-known antibiotics, that each of them damage the bacteria in one layer. So polymyxin B damage the bacteria at the outer membrane, so this part here, and penicillin kills the bacteria by damaging the periplasmatic space, lysozyme as well, but in another way, basically, and kanamycin is an internal antibiotic. Okay, so it stops the cell growth by affecting the synthesis of proteins. So, you can use different antibiotics. The idea of using these 4 is because actually I know pretty much how they work. I found something new on the ampicillin. But because what I want is to have some tool that I can damage the cells in just one way. When I have this damage done, next step, we have produced a protocol, a multidisciplinary approach, I will say, that is made on 4 different experiments. On the first one, you have a petri dish, it's how we grow the cells. And these little white dots here are filtered papers. In one you add water as a control, and the other one you impregnate it with the antibiotic or whatever you want to study. Overnight, when they grow, you see that if there is an effect on the killing bacteria, you will see an area, I will show you some pictures of real experiments, where no bacteria have grown. And this is the area of toxicity of the antibiotic that diffuses overnight from the filter to the cells. No area surrounding means that whatever you have here is has no bacteria, cannot kill actually bacteria. Once you know that, we do the next experiment, which is growing the bacteria in different mediums and actually observe how, as a function of time, the number of cells, so the blue one will be the control, the red one will be a cell that has been actually killed, because the cell is still in the same number, doesn't go down, this will be an antibiotic acting as an internal part of the cell, so the cells don't explode. If the cell will explode, will go down way. Okay? Next step, we plate the cells on rich medium, and overnight we can see if nothing grow, means that all the cells after this experiment, they were dead. If that's the case, we take the cells from here and we do probably what them, also the nanotechnology part, which will be observing them, characterize them on atomic force microscopy. And by looking at the atomic force microscopy, we can see how the bacteria is, how length, width, and height has been affected by the presence of the substance that you want to study. If I say something that probably is not very clear, because I will present some data, okay, please do stop and ask me questions, okay? Okay, here are the experiments. This is the disc diffusion experiment. You can see what I was telling you before, the disc with antibiotic, this is ampicillin. And all this area, you see, there are dead cells. Here you have all the live cells. So this is the area that the antibiotic has been acting. When I started doing this experiment with silver ions, I noticed that at 2 micrograms, about the concentration, I can see a little bit here. Can you see it? Mm-hmm. A little bit of area affecting the bacteria. However, as much as I was increasing the concentration of ions, I couldn't find like this, like the area is becoming extremely like proportional to the concentration, but I saw something weird, that the filters were becoming brownish. Can you see it? Mm-hmm. They're not that white. Okay, when I did the same experiment with the nanoparticles, I have two sizes of nanoparticles, 10 nanometers and 30 nanometers, okay? So the three samples that I'm working are three ions, ions structured in a nanoparticle of 10 nanometers and 30. When I was doing this experiment with 10 and 30, you realize there is no area affected, but they're all brown. So I thought, okay, wait a second. I know that silver ions, at least, they are very toxic, but I don't find the toxicity that I'm supposed to find with this methodology. Okay, so let's go to the next step. So we start doing the experiments in liquid, because there's much more, it's more easy to observe the effect of the any antibiotic in liquid than in solid. So here you will see, for instance, the control cells, as soon as I add in red silver ions, they stop growing. Okay, fantastic. So at least I found that there's the toxicity that I was expecting. So when then I did the silver nanoparticles, this is what I found. I mean, to be honest, I found, so the blue are the control, the red, the 10 nanometers, and the pink, 30 nanometers. I saw the bigger concentration. So I saw just a little bit of effect, very, very small. And I'm like, well, if this is real, the nanotoxicity, or how this silver actually is toxic to the cells. I mean, this will never explain the mechanism of toxicity. It looks like these nanoparticles are not toxic, okay? However, we observe again the same problem. As I saw in the filters becoming brown, the medium was becoming darker and darker as the presence of the silver ions of nanoparticles. So I promise you that I did this experiment with the highest concentration possible that I could add. Seriously, it was like far from what is a scientific experiment, and nothing. I saw nothing, but the darkness of the medium was increasing. So what we found here is that, we stopped the experiments, we look at the medium composition, and we found that four of the molecules that are on the medium, actually, they bind to the surface of the silver nanoparticle and to silver ions, and they precipitate, okay? So basically, what I was looking here was something rather stupid, because as soon as I put the nanoparticles will precipitate down, the cell will be shaking happily on top, so there is no interaction between silver and nano. So, I mean, are they toxic? I don't know. But that's not the way, absolutely, to actually check the toxicity or any nanomaterial. due to this precipitation, this is a physics separation between the cells and the nanostructures. Okay, so we defined, we looked and found a new medium which was nothing of these molecules. It was very clean. Unfortunately, in this medium, cells do not grow, but they are in contact of the nanoparticles. So when we did the experiment, we saw some little effect. And once again, you can think, I mean, nothing, to be honest, nothing very toxic, according to this experiment. So we thought, okay, either these nanoparticles are not toxic at all, or this is neither the way of observing this. What can happen here is that they are all dead and I don't see it, or there is no toxicity. So a little bit tired, my student and myself, on doing this experiment with silver, we decided to get these cells and plate on rich medium. You cultivate it overnight, and if they are alive, you will see like here, okay? This is all the cells that have grown overnight, all alive, they're all very happy. Now look what happens when I actually search the cells after being treated with silver ions, nanoparticles of this size. They were nothing. These were actually really, really toxic. The only problem that we were having is that the methodology we're using is not the proper methodology. And it's not just me in the lab. This is the methodology that people is using for regulation of nanostructures. Okay, that's a problem. The nano, when it appears on the market, and it's true, the important definition was that the size what makes all the properties different. So the only regulation that at the beginning was just the size. Because the size of a nano is equal to the size of a molecule of antibiotic. These are the experiments that people were doing to determine toxicity of the nanomaterials. And it was very scary, and actually my first reaction when I saw that is to back up a little bit far away from the sample, because I realized that for the last 2 years I've been working with something extremely toxic. Obviously, this experiment I did it with really high concentration by my standards, not the standard of the products that we have in the market. So I decided to, okay, let's do it in this way, but let's go down the concentration and see how much I can dilute the silver to not find any toxicity. These are preliminary experiments, we're still working on that. Oh, by the way, first of all, what I did was I look at the atomic force microscopy, cells that are affected with the 4 different antibiotics. I know how a bacteria looks like when you break a particular part of the membrane. I took the cells that were actually dead with ions and nanoparticles. I look at them, and to my surprise, which is nice, this is the control. Now, if you compare control with silver ions, we found no different, no alteration of membrane, silver nanoparticles, nothing, 30 nothing. And this is another nanostructure that actually breaks the bacteria. But these are completely dead. So what we found here is that silver ions, silver nanoparticles of different size, they actually, the mechanism of killing bacteria is internal. There is no evidence that any nanoparticle go inside the bacteria. So what is toxic of the silver nanoparticle are the ions. As I mentioned at the beginning, silver are very unstable, so there is a release of ions constantly. And are these ions what are toxic? Ions go through the membrane, go inside the cell, and they actually stop the mechanism by binding on the DNA. Ions are impossible to distinguish between a membrane of a bacteria or a membrane of a fungus or a human cell. So if ion is the source of the toxicity of these nanoparticles, nanoparticles are toxic not only for bacteria, are toxic for humans as well. And the toxicity is higher than what we expect because we have found that the methodology that we use to check the toxicity is not appropriate. Here is some of the experiments that we are doing now to check actually at what concentration silver is not toxic. And we are actually, these are the experiments done at the beginning, but like 4 micrograms per milliliter was quite a lot. And we actually found that, yes, silvers are more toxic than 10 nanometers and 30, so there's a release, there's a less toxicity, but these guys are absolutely toxic. So I'm pretty comfortable with my experiments right now to say that silver is very toxic, and I wanted to say that because now we talk it, I explained you the product, now we're gonna talk about industry. One day I found in an application for my phone called, here you find here, Finding Nano. You can download the application and you can look in this project, you can look products, products of nanotechnology that are already on the market. So, of course, I did my research for silver here. Only just silver, which includes nanoparticles and ions. And to my surprise, I saw that, that was a month ago, there were 150 products using silver nanoparticles. Today, 170, and the number of products with silver nanoparticles is increasing as the time I'm speaking. I don't know, but I got a really very scared. These guys are very toxic, and there's already a lot of products on silver on the market. So I look for what kind of products we have. I'm sure you heard about the silver socks, which you they kill the actually you kill the bacteria on your feet, so they're not smelly. There is one a little bit scary to my point of view. It's this one is a deodorant for shoes, whatever, with silver ions. I mean, okay, understand, ions are toxic for everything, okay? And my favorite one, the Lucky Silver Nano Truth. Yeah, you're lucky, okay? If you wanna try, go for it. Definitely I'm not trying. There is another one, which this is, I don't think that you can read it from here. This is the plastic bands when you put it when you have a cut, okay? Using silver nanoparticles, and when you read more or less what how it works, the company say, well, silver ions are highly active and rapid penetrate bacteria membranes. Yes, and us as well, okay? They interact with enzymes, I agree with this. And then the last question, does silver kill good bacteria as well? And obviously the answer is yes. Okay, silver kills every single thing as it is right now. So, before that, I mean, this is all the research I've been doing, looking on the different supermarkets, but as one day I explained to Alison that probably one of the most scary things is this. I was doing my research online on serum products and I found a diet company that actually sell this, which are 1 nanometer silver colloids, which is a nanoparticle. Okay, the colloids will confuse people. 1 nanometer silver pills that tell they tell them that you can use them to lose weight. Okay, so I decide, I use my Yahoo account and my home address so they don't know who I am, see if I can buy them and how many safety paperwork I need to have this on my hands. 1 week, no paper, nothing. So okay, yes, you do lose weight on your way, you're dying, okay? So this happens, seriously. Okay, so what's the problem? Well, we really need a better regulation. My point here is that this is just silver. And actually I thought, I mean, it's probably one of the most controversial material that we have right now because all of this that I'm showing to you. But imagine that we had a little accident, okay? Then what happens? This all the world, all the big nanotechnology potential that nanotechnology has, the risk of, the perception of risk will increase. So basically, nanotechnology will be affected if someone overtakes this silver. So now we know that it's toxic. Okay, so this nanotoxicity that kills the bacteria, it's okay. I mean, I'm totally against on all these products in the market, but if we understand how this process happens, you can tell you how what you want. And it's not that bad knowing, the importance of knowing what you're having in your hands, if you can control it, and that's why we're working in the lab, now I know what nanoparticle or what size and what shape can actually interact with a particular bacteria and not to the other one. And this is just the definition of a new generation of antibiotics. There will be metallic antibiotics that selectively attack to one or another cell. But it has been important to know all the mechanisms, important to identify that the problem is the ions, to actually move towards something better, like a generation of antibiotics. And I have a plan to use these nanoparticles for further studies on stem cell research. But one thing we have to be always thinking about it. It's okay to use, I mean, a lot of people think like, okay, fine, but silver is toxic, but if I put it in a phone, I'm not eating the phone, okay? So it's not gonna be toxic for me. And that's true. However, every 2 years, in UK at least, we change our phone. So we are generating nano waste. These nanoparticles will remain there and will actually interact with the ecosystem. The ecosystem can get some new material, but we cannot collapse that. So before we reach this problem, all these new products have to be better regulated to actually have a problem as we have right now with radioactivity waste. Okay. Very often, so why, we can think like, why these things happen? Why a product of silver is on the market? Well, 170 products are on the market, while the researchers, we haven't said this is okay or this is not. So why, in which part of my original idea, research, safety and commercialization, why is going backwards? Okay, so basically, scientists, we always have been, well, very often we've been blamed that we don't talk with people on business or policymakers. Basically, they always say that we don't talk too much, so that could be one of the problems that these things happen. Now, I have to tell you that being part of the Oxford Martin School, this is not the case. My colleagues and me, we are very often exposed to talk to people on policymakers, industry, entrepreneurs. And when you talk to them, you realize that, okay, we speak the same language. But fair enough, when we are having a coffee, they're very nice people, they want to understand what's going on. So we speak the same language. There is no problem understanding us. So what's the main problem here? When you talk to them, you realize quickly, like, uh-oh, there is a problem. So what it is? When I think about my experiments, for instance, this new drug delivery system for cancer cells, if I think on the money that we have, how big is the group is, the amount of experiments that I need to do, I think that average, in 20 years, I will be very comfortable to say that I have 100% quality research experiments to actually release this product on the market. Think that if you're doing some medicine, you have to go all through clinical trials. And each clinical trial is about 5 years and a lot of money, to be honest. So average 20 years to have my new drug delivery system on the market. And do you think that 20 years nanotechnology regulation is going to wait for us? Definitely not. You have seen it in silver. Nanotechnology, future nanotechnology business will wait for 20 years? No. And actually worse, a person with cancer will wait for 20 years? No. So what's the problem? Time. We speak the same language, indeed we do. But I speak with units of time of years. They do in nanoseconds. Okay? So the problem is that we need to grab together, sit together, and actually I have to speed up my project, they have to slow down regulation and marketing products until we are 100% sure, okay, fine, I'm not comfortable with 100, let's say 99% sure that that's safety. Okay, so I've been thinking for the last 2 years, year and a half, on this situation. If I release my project in 10 years, that not 100% sure about everything, I will have a quality of science of 60%, so I compromise in the quality just because I want to go fast. Okay, this is never gonna happen with me, okay? Science has to be 100% controlled in order to say this is toxic, this is not. So, okay, how I can have this scenario? How I can reduce the time, produce something in 10 years that do not affect the quality of my science? Okay, so after thinking, because, I mean, when you talk with people, you realize that there is time is the factor that we need to work. And we can complain, but actually I really have to be, no, it's not about complaining, you want to do something, okay? So we have to stop saying, oh, this is the problem, okay, stop, what we can do? So after some time thinking, I came across with two ideas. Okay, do not be scared right now. Okay, just bear with me. First of all, I realized that all this crazy story with silver nanoparticles has actually made me understand what are the experiments that I need to do to be comfortable to say this is toxic, this is not, and how this toxicity works. So basically, you have a nanoparticle here. You do what we call it antibiogram, and you follow, you see the white boxes. These are one experiment, two experiments, three, four. So in four experiments, if you follow my advice, all this, well, I will tell you, it's toxic, it's not toxic. If it's toxic, do next one. If it's toxic, do next one. So with four experiments, very well described right now, you can actually have pretty much idea if your nanoparticle is interacting with something that produces toxicity, okay? So basically anyone, you don't have to be a biologist or knowing a lot about nanotechnology. If you follow this protocol in four experiments, which I think that being optimistically will take about less than a month, you can actually know if a nanoparticle is toxic or not on your system. However, I was a little bit scared here because all these experiments, I go from a cell population growth with I have millions of cells, and then I analyze by atomic force microscopy or by SEM, 20 cents, for instance, or 30, depends on the day how lucky you are. So I thought, okay, is this 30 or 20 cells representative from the original sample, which I have millions of cells? And it's at this point that I realized that I need some statistics, some mathematics to validate all these experiments. And my multidisciplinarity has a limit when it came to maths. Okay, I'm terrible. So that's when I contact my friend, Professor Sergi Sibit, who unfortunately cannot be joining us today. I told him, I was like, look, I have this problem. Can you help me with doing some statistical analysis that validates all these experiments in order to have an idea of achieve this protocol, which is very easy, but I want to make sure that anyone that deals with nanoparticles has something to do in very, very short time. Well, indeed, I'm totally happy he managed to do it, but we went even farther than that. We analyzing the variations and all the effects of the silver on bacteria, we realized that one of the changes are not very significant. For instance, height, the loss of height on a bacteria is not very significant. Width and length are actually very significant. So we are now doing this. This is a matrix of two up to three variations that we think that are very important. Basically, if you do all these four experiments, and Sergi is creating a program, a code, where you actually put all your data, you will obtain a dot, for instance, this one. This will be the case of silver. So you see there is the square dividing four blocks. If your sample lands in here, this is telling you that the mechanism, this is gonna be toxic, this is the no toxicity, okay? This is gonna be toxic, and it's probably the toxicity is internal, as it is on the ions that I show you. If your sample goes in here, this nanoparticle that you are studying is toxic, and it's more than that, it's telling you by comparison that this toxicity is due by the interaction on that specific part of the cell. If it's here, it's interacting in another way, and if it's here, it's interacting in another way. If you're lucky enough and your nanoparticle lands in the green safety area, that means that your nanoparticle is not toxic. The idea on this, that we are working now, and hopefully I will have it done in 1 month time, is to create the nanotox database. So my idea is everyone that needs to use some nanoparticles, it doesn't matter if it's research, company, or whatever, use this system, which is four experiments, and the difficulty of the experiment, but okay, run the program that Serge is creating, and you will have data here. If this data is free, and everyone can actually access to this, this is the nanotox data base that I will actually take it to the European Commission Safety Regulations in Nanotechnology, and hopefully that can imply as a standard on toxicity for nanoparticles. Hopefully it works okay. It's still there. Oh yeah. I decided to try other cells, not just bacteria, and I tried with red blood cells, actually my red blood cells here. Very nice, you can take it because they are in liquid, I don't have to grow in tissue. And these are red blood cells in the presence of ions and nanoparticles, you can see that are toxic because this is your red blood cell. This is the control. Look at that after being with ions. So tell me that that's not toxic. And you can see here, some nanoparticles actually make the same shape, like inflated, like there is an osmotic change regulation here, and actually the same in here. So this is not only validated for bacteria cells, I want in the future to have done with different type of cells, not only bacteria, but human cells. So this is on working process. Another thing that we are doing, I'm not gonna go into this particular experiment, but another way I thought, my problem is, remember, I need to make the time shorter, but I don't want to compromise my science. So working with Sergi, we realized that now that we understand this height, length, temperature, pH, some of them, what are actually the variables that matters. So can we actually predict before doing the experiment? Or can we have more information by using some statistical tools that will tell you this is not important, this is important? So it's kind of prediction. I don't like this word of predict because it looks like very unscientific, but okay, it's using statistical tools to analyze very preliminary experiments, analyze as much as you can, and actually reduce to one or two experiments. In this case, I gave him, probably he's gonna kill me, I gave him one of the most difficult questions I have right now in the lab, I'm not going to talk about this, but this is a single nanotube with DNA functionalized, and he's trying with this thing to answer why these nanostructures suddenly are all aligned in these two dimensions, which we were expected to aggregate it. Okay, so two ideas. By generating a multidisciplinary approach, very simple, and a database, help the people in four experiments to know if it's toxic or not. And the second idea, predicting thinking using a statistical tool to reduce the number of experiments I need to do from 500 to 2. Okay, these are the two things that I've been thinking right now. However, I can think about lots of things, but what we actually need is a little bit better government funding. We need engagement with pharmaceutical companies, engagement with industry, and better engagement with policymakers. Actually, this can be translated in, we need a little bit more money. I don't know where we're coming from, but if we don't have more money, I mean, seriously, I can reduce the time, but not the experiments. Pharmaceutical companies, I've been talking to them. They're very interested in nanotechnology, obviously, but the problem that they found is that for them it's too risk. It's very young, it's too risk. So they will only get money, for instance, in my project, as soon as I go through the second clinical trial, which for me is like 10 years from now. So we need to engage more with them and let them know that, come on, you know, like, it's important. So I hope that this kind of project like the nanotox will help on the engagement of industry. Oh, yes. The day before yesterday, I was very happy to find that there, in respect of silver, some of the products are not, you cannot find them. These guys, these pills, which for me is the worst, you cannot find them anymore, so you cannot buy them. And one thing that I did new this year is to be, and regardless of this, that experimentalists, we do not talk with policy people, actually been advisor on the Blavatnik School of Government on the program, on the Master of Public Policy this year. I've been working with 12 students, some of them are here today. And there were 12 students. One group was looking how nanotechnology is regulated in the States, the other group how nanotechnology is regulated in Germany, Europe, and the other one how nanotechnology is being regulated in China. When you actually analyze each different case, scenarios, you understand, in case of the States, why FDA in 2009 allowed some of the products on the market, the silver market, a silver nanotechnology in the market, because actually they were doing the first experiments that I showed to you, so they didn't find that much toxicity, okay? We know that a new commission will meet and the new regulation will be in 2014, so we have this year gap that I can predict there will be thousands of products of silver right now, in this next year, because in 2014, when the new regulation will be implied, 60% of the products are going to be out, for sure. FDA have decided that between this gap will not just wait for 2004. He's actually implying and using more technology to actually be careful and look for the, in the case of silver, they found that there is a problem and they are applying new technology. So this is happening in the States, it's actually happening in Europe, it's not happening in China. And when you actually observe in global, what we were doing on the debate the last day of the master students presenting, when you actually see from the outside the three different places, you can realize that the regulation is a mess. And we really need to do something, because in China and Korea, they go in one way, States goes in another one, Europe in another one, but I can buy products from China, I can buy products from everywhere. So something that in Europe is not allowed to, or is not yet commercialized, I can buy it from other place. So we really need to actually think and study this situation. So as I was very happy about this because they actually mentioned my paper, so that was cool. And basically now every time that you want to buy a product from a state that contains silver, there is a warning message saying that FDA do not approve any product with silver nanoparticles. It's up to the consumer if you want to have it or not. So, okay. Oh, yes, I add this slide to remind you that, okay, I've just been a little bit tough with nanotechnology today because I killed the silver nanoparticles, but okay, this is not that bad. Other nanoparticles, other materials have been really good. And we have products of nanotechnology everywhere right now. And as part of my research, I quite like to go to Boots, Tesco, Sainsbury, all these shops, and look what new products we found on nanotechnology. And yesterday I came across with something new. I'm not going to make any advertising here, but I showed it to you before. So very often people ask me, so Sonia, what do you think that is going to be the breakthrough in nanotechnology, the big experiment that will break the nanotechnology more to our society? And until now I always thought that it was going to be nanomedicine. Like, for instance, if you have a medicine to treat the cancer and everything. But from yesterday, I changed my mind. I found one product that, believe me, is not toxic. I check. Second, I don't know exactly how wood will work because I don't know. There's very little information you can find in this leaflet. I decided not to buy the product because it's out of my project, my funding project. So I couldn't buy it. It's quite a little bit expensive, but it's going to work. Maybe this, probably this one, no, but this is the philosophy working. And I'm talking about a product that will make that the male do not lose hair. So in our society, this is a big problem, and I think that that could actually bring the breakthrough nanotechnology. So to finish, I wanted to just to bring to you one where I think that it's important way and the factor and the key to work and bridge the gap between product, industry, experiment, and regulation, and as I've been talking, for me just time. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Sonia, for a fascinating talk. I just thought I would just kick it off with a question that I had. So it seemed like your experiments have revealed that there's this unexpected toxicity in nanoscale silver that isn't there. Silver. And it's not as though the FDA hasn't investigated silver before. I mean, it's clear.
No. I'm not gonna say that they did something bad. No.
So macro scale silver, we are satisfied. You know, there's been a lot of study of. You know, there are. You can even in cakes. You know, sometimes have these little silver pearls on top.
No, that's fine. At the macro level, it's fine.
So what I was going to say is though that what your research seems to show is that you can't. Assume that if something is safe at the macro scale, then it's safe at the nano scale.
Exactly.
And maybe that should be our blanket approach. And I was just wondering if you would support a regulation. So suppose that the FDA said everything at the nano scale is assumed to be unsafe, like as though it were a new material.
Yeah.
Because I assume that the reason that you can sell these, or these people have been able to sell nanoparticle silver for diet pills is just because macroscale silver is known to be safe.
No, that's not the reason. The reason is because this is not a medicine.
Right.
The only moment, as I said from the beginning, the only point that nanotechnology has been actually very careful with safety is when it came to medicine. This you buy it as a diet pill, cosmetic. There is no safety regulation on how this will interact with human body only when it's a medicine.
But at a macro scale, we do think of silver as
a food. It's beautiful, actually, wood and silver.
No, but we use it as a food as well, or as a cosmetic aspect in food. So, I mean, another way to look at it would be that when things get into the nanoscale, they automatically become medicines. So there are various different ways that you could institute a sort of a broad cautionary approach.
Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering if you would, I mean, is that what you would recommend to the FDA to try to prevent this from happening?
In an ideal case, I would like to do it like that, but I will not do it because then I will slow down my own field of research. Now you have to think about it. Why silver is toxic is the ion, okay? So if the ion is the toxic, you can have a nanoparticle, round, square, blah, blah, blah. If it's not stable, it will be toxic. That's now easy to understand. A carbon nanotube, the ion is carbon. Carbon is not going to be toxic. So if there is any toxicity of carbon nanotubes, will not be the same problem that we have with silver. So we have to produce, and I think that our main point as ethics, as experimentalist people, is to produce a standard that they can actually use for researching the toxicity of this new nanomaterial. I mean, there's plenty of nanomaterials now in the market with silica. Silica is fine, okay? And zinc oxide, titanium oxide. I mean, it's not just because they are nano, they're toxic. Okay, so toxicity could come from the atomic composition, from the shape, or from size. We are working on that. But I can never say that everything nano is toxic, definitely not. Gold nanoparticle, by the way, a gold nanoparticle equal, like my silver nanoparticles, same size, shape, everything, but just being gold is completely fine. There is no toxicity.
Okay.
Okay? So we cannot blame all the nano to be toxic, absolutely not.